We're back for another episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. A somewhat well-rested Paul Dottino. John Schmelk with you, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. If you want to participate in the show that way, you can as well. Of course, the draft is a few days old now. You've heard from Paul and I plenty on what we think about the picks, so we're not going to go into that at the start of the show. We will have a guest. We'll be joined by Spencer Leftwich, who is Will Hernandez's offensive line coach at UTEP. He'll join us in just a couple of minutes. Paul, over the last couple of days, obviously some information has kind of leaked out from around the league about the draft. We've broken down each Giants pick ad nauseum. Any overarching thoughts that have kind of popped into your head since the draft has ended?
You know, John, I think that the one thing that I noticed is that there were some teams who clearly stayed away from all injury medical file guys, and there were other teams that simply didn't seem to be affected by that at all and drafted a bunch of guys who had medical files regardless. Great example, the Jets. Half of their guys had medical issues, but it didn't seem to matter. Cowboys took Van Der Esch in the first round. Linebacker, terrific player. Medical question.
Yeah. For some, and the funny, and that's the deal, you know, for some teams it might be a medical question. Other teams, they might have cleared the guy completely. So it really depends team to team whether or not they, how serious they consider those medical conditions.
And that happens every year.
Correct.
With certain guys. But I found it interesting in that some teams seem to flat out, for example, the Giants, as far as I know, none of the guys they took, none of them had any medical. None of them.
Not that I can think of, no.
So it's not just how do we grade a particular player in some cases where, okay, we're not going to take the risk on that or we think the medical's okay. No, it looks as though by looking at some of these boards, some teams flat out disqualified medical guys no matter what. It didn't matter anything about the player. We're not taking any players who are medical. And other teams didn't seem to care. Again, the Jets took a bunch of guys who have medical. So it wasn't just one guy.
Right.
For instance, the tight end that they took. Half of their guys had medical.
Now, again, that doesn't mean the Giants were adverse to picking anybody that might have had a past injury. They just didn't happen to do it.
I'm going to say that's probably more of a real pattern than it is just a coincidence. That's my guess. But it's simply an educated guess. When you look at a team that's gone through an entire draft and has none of those questions, just a guess. So that kind of struck me a little bit odd that there were so many teams in both of those camps.
The other thing that got revealed on a podcast, I forget which one, I think it was Albert Breer, talked to Baker Mayfield's agent at the top of the draft. And
okay.
He said that they weren't sure if the Browns were going to take him in one. They knew the Jets were a floor at three. And he said there was one team that told him you could have a surprise at number two. Take a guess what team it was. And it wasn't the Giants.
It wasn't Denver?
New England Patriots.
To go up to two?
Now, I don't think they had the ammunition to do it, but that's what Baker Mayfield's agent said the Patriots told him.
Well, let's just say this. If the Patriots had called, and Dave Gettleman admitted that there were calls that he received in the days prior to the draft, but they were for peanuts, popcorn, and Cracker Jacks and stuff.
You forgot hot dogs, but that's
yes,
okay.
Yes, yes. So obviously there wasn't much there in terms of the offer. And then, as we know, Dave Gettleman, when it got time for the pick, he was just making the pick, and that was it. It was already too late for anybody else to make a barnstorming move.
You ready for our guest?
Let's go.
All right, here we go. Our first guest of the show is Spencer Leftwich, former offensive line coach over at the University of Texas, El Paso. He coached the Giants' second-round pick, Will Hernandez. Spencer, you got John Schmelk and Paul Dottino in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing great, and we had a chance to talk to Will on the phone after he selected on Friday. Seems like a wonderful young man, very excited to get going. I guess the first thing we'll ask, since you were kind of up close and personal with him more than we were or any fans were at UTEP, what type of guy are the Giants getting, in person are the Giants getting in Will Hernandez?
Well, they're getting a first-class quality human being. Will is a first-rate quality citizen. He was a joy to be around. He was as one of our kids in our program that you know, knew how to handle himself from the get-go. He was raised right. He has great parents. He was a joy to coach. But you know, more than that, he was just a good person. And I think that's what the Giants has got is in this draft choice, in this pick, is a young man that's a quality human being.
Well, you know, Spencer, there's no question the Giants were looking for good character guys in the locker room. Dave Gettleman told us that the moment he was hired, and he has certainly shown a pattern of that in his early tenure acquisitions. Let me ask you about his development as a player. From the time that you started to coach him to the time that he has now come out and entered the NFL, where have you seen the most progress? Where do you think he still needs to round things out before he becomes an NFL player?
Well, you know, his progress from day one, he was with us 2013 until this last season. We made a decision to redshirt him, and it was more on our decision as our program. That was our first year there. Could he have played? Could he have helped us? There was no question. Some kids are, you know, you're either redshirted for developmental reasons or for injury or whatever it is. He was more because we were in the first year of our program, and looking the long haul, that was what we decided. And where he came from, so he could have played. He was physically developed and strength-wise, and that very few high school, especially offensive linemen, are ready to come in and play that position. But so that was the reason. And then he took that year and – yes, there were some things he was totally had to, you know, start over and learn, just like all freshmen from making the jump from high school to the college rank, as far as, you know, understanding of leverage and you know, steps and footwork and just, you know, ground zero of technique and fundamentals and those things. And, you know, he's just a sponge is the best way. every practice in spring to fall, young man just got better and better and better and better. And, you know, that's just a testament to him because football is important to him. And not only the game is, but just the way he's made up, just the way he wants to be the best. And, you know, from seeing him from the first day he entered our program and our first, fall practice camp until this last season, just the knowledge and not only refining the little things that you have to do in every position, but, you know, ours in the offensive line, it's such a skill refined position and with hand placements and hat and your footwork and those things. And just from day one until he left, he just was totally developed to the player that he is now. And he's not finished. The Giants are getting a young man that has also room to grow, and sure, you know, and he will there.
I don't know if he can physically grow any more than he is because he's one mountain of a man already, Spencer.
No, he is. You know what was a story or something that was, you know, watching him and, you know, it's recruiting high school player and, you know, drafting. Yes, there's differences and there's, you know, the degree and the money and but watching somebody, one of the most impressive things was he sent me a tape out of high school, a video, and the young man power cleaned 360 pounds.
Wow.
In
high school. And at 17 years old or anybody, that was, you know, to see somebody can bend and snap and was that powerful right then, just say, you know what, if we can't find a place for this guy, maybe something's wrong with us. And, you know, I had a chance to, you know, our head coach was Sean Kugler, who spent 10 years prior to taking a job at UTEP, was an NFL offensive line coach. And, you know, I mean, that was something that we haven't seen him or me from a high school kid ever. So that's just how powerful and strong the young man is.
You know, Coach, you mentioned him refining his technique, and I think automatically, when you think of a big guy like Will Hernandez, and I saw him at the Senior Bowl, and your eyes are automatically, you know, drawn to him, how he's manhandling guys and everything. But that technique's necessary to handle some of the quicker speed rushers at the three technique that he'll find at the NFL level. How is he in dealing with those speedier, quicker pass rushers, and how does his technique help him deal with those guys?
Well, one, you know, we talked about strength. He is so strong in his hands, and he, you know, and there's video of him doing it at the senior game, and we played OU as our first game. I know that film has been on a bunch. He played, you know, we played Texas his junior year, but you know, his strength, he really has a knack of getting his hands on you. And when he can get his hands on you playing guard, a three technique, being on just on the outside of you, you know, and his feet are really good. You saw that in his drills and his combine workout. And you know, he's going to be able to snatch you up. That's one of his qualities. He understands and has developed, and we worked on is what is your strength, and his strength is his power. You know, the power that he has, and he's just able just to set and to get his hands on you. I think that's going to be, and obviously, the NFL is another you know, level, and he's going to be every Sunday. You're playing against the best, but that's one of the things that he's able to do, and I think that he will be coached and not refined also at that level, you know, with y'all. But he can get his hands on people fast, and in his pass sets and in his run block, and his use his feet and use his power and his strength to get, you know, I call him a rogue grader, to get that body on someone, you know.
Spencer Leftwich, former UTEP offensive line coach, joins us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. He coached Will Hernandez, the Giants' second-round draft pick. Spencer, was there a particular game, was there a particular player matchup that you can remember where you really said to yourself, you know what, this guy's going to be one terrific pro? It doesn't have to be during his senior season. Maybe it was during his junior season where, you knew he had crossed that threshold from being a really good college player to being a legitimate blue-chip prospect.
Yeah, you know, when we, like I said, his junior year, game two, we played Texas. And, you know, you could see things, you know, you saw things in him and his growth from, you know, from his first start in 2014. And now he's, you know, we line up against those guys, and he had a great game. He, you know, looked like he belonged there, he, you know, dominated, you know, guys in front of him. And at that point right there, leaving that stadium there at that time, second game of his junior year, you know, wow, this guy can be exactly what, you know, we thought he could be. And that was game two, and he could only get better. And that's when it hit me, is that, you know, you thought this, you saw a flash here, you see him progress from, you know, 14 to 15, but, you know, game two in a 16 year against the University of Texas, that's when I knew that he was something special.
Coach, believe it or not, the Giants drafted Chris Snee in the second round in the same exact spot that they selected Will
34.
Hernandez.
Yeah.
And when you talk to Chris Snee off the field, he was a soft-spoken, nice young man. Not very different than when we talked to Will Hernandez on the phone. But when you put Chris Snee on the field, he was a mean son of a gun and liked to beat the heck out of people. Does Will Hernandez have that same mean streak when he gets on the field? Judging by the number of pancakes I saw in his game film, I think the answer is probably yes, right?
Yeah, no question. The young man is term everybody uses or whatever, he can flip the switch. He can, when he hits the field, he is a he's in a very intense, very plays with, you know, controlled, you know, aggression, but he is a mean, powerful young man. And no, he can flip that switch and be the guy you want him to be on your side. If you're picking teams, you want to pick him first.
Final question for me, Coach. In the NFL, we know the playbooks are a little bit different. Guys are stronger and faster and bigger and everything else. How do you think he will do in terms of getting to the second level, getting out in terms of leading blocks downfield, matching up against some guys who now at this level will be as big and as strong as he is? I mean, no disrespect, but when you're coming out of college, sometimes guys aren't as big as you and they're not as strong as you either.
No, you're right. And I think that's in any level you move, high school to college, college obviously to, you know, the National Football League, which is, you know, each level you jump up, there's going to be more guys like you. All 11 on defense are true guys. But I think Will, the thing that I saw in him from the last football game in the combine workout in the East-West game is, you know, Will went from about his weight at the combine, I want to say, was like, what, 321, 317?
Yes. Yeah, it was around 320, I thought.
Yes, yeah. And he played at about, 340, 337, somewhere in there. So he lost about a good 10 pounds or so from the game until the combine workouts. I think that's going to make him, and that was good. I think that's going to make him quicker, more explosive when he does get on the second level. Those guys in y'all's league are phenomenal. But yeah, I think that's what he needs to do. I see that being a plus for him when he gets to there, that he can have the agility and the foot speed, you know, to get on top of those guys. And that's his plus, is to get his body, we always talked about, get your body on top of them, get out of space. And I think losing the weight and getting down to that playing weight that I think that is where he's going to be, or, you know, obviously y'all going to have something for him. But I think that's going to help him. I really do.
Coach, two quickies for you. One, the scheme you guys ran in college. When we talked to Will on Friday, he talked about how it was a pro-style offense and it would help his transition. You obviously know the playbook better than anybody, and you know the type of stuff they run in the NFL. How easy of a transition is it going to be, and what's the type of stuff you had him run there? Was it mostly gap and power? Did he do a lot of zone stuff too? What should that adjustment be like for him in the pros?
I think he's going to have obviously there's always an adjustment, but I do think he's going to have an advantage because we were a pro-style gap scheme offense, power, big power team, counter team. We ran power. We probably ran it more with him pulling. He could do more damage, and he was, you know, at point of attack. And I think he's going to fit into that scheme. I think we did huddle. We did have checks at the line of scrimmage, went one side to the other side, or killed a play and went to another play. He's been in that scheme. We have made, the front calls and identified the Mike linebacker and some of those things that are, you know, that you see on Sundays get lost now in the college football game. But, you know, that was our offense. We were pro style. We were gap, downhill, running the football. I think that, terminology is going to be like anything else. Everybody has their own terminology. But when you get down to it, how you call it, but you're still running a gap scheme, power, counters, those type gap scheme, no pullers with big NFL play. But he's been introduced today. He's been into it 5 years. He's ran it. Just getting down the, like I said, the terminology and, you know, the language and those things. But he's been in it. I don't think the learning curve is going to be like you see some of the linemen coming in or other positions with the spread and the hurry up and those things.
Perfect. Final question, Coach. Real quick, I want to ask you about something specifically Dave Gettleman mentioned that attracted him to Will Hernandez. Much like the Giants last year, you guys had a rough year. You had a coaching change. You know, towards the end of the year, Guys can sometimes check out. It's just the way of the world. It happens. But Dave Gettleman noticed that Will Hernandez looked like the same guy in Game 11 that he looked like in Game 2, despite what your record was. What was he like going through the losing and the tough year? And was he really, even to you, the same guy despite all the losing? Because that can be very important at the pro level.
You know, and we said that in our first question, that's his character. There was no difference. Our first game, everybody starts a season off with expectations and those things. No, it was not, did not go anywhere like we had planned, or it was a tough year for everybody. But Will never stopped. And any season, Will never stopped wanting to get better, wanting to learn. And there was never a playoff. There was never, hey, you know, we had nobody that was going to replace Will. I mean, we knew it. He knew it. Whatever, you know, I mean, there was not, you know, that was a situation. He never took advantage of that. No matter who we were going to play, what our record was, what happened the week before, you know, the young man, you know, made it a bright spot of the season. And he just wants to get better. I mean, that's him. He wants to be the very best he can be. And he did not stop wanting to get better and practicing and meeting and doing the little things that go into it that, you know, people don't see. All they see is a Saturday game, a Sunday game. But, no, the young man never, ever folded his tent, never took a playoff, never took a week or whatever it was. He was a joy to work, and I will. That was one of the bright spots and positive. And you know, my last 5 years have been a joy coaching him.
Coach, I'm going to cheat and ask you one more question, because you were just talking now about everything that people have seen, and he is what you see. Can you give me a behind-the-curtain story about him that maybe the public doesn't know about? Obviously, it can be humorous, that will give people a better sense of what he's all about, either as a man or as a player or just as a teammate, something that maybe hasn't been on tape or hasn't been in the newspapers.
You know, I don't know. He's just you know, I'll tell
good
you
job.
This. Every year, before our season, we have our, you know, I always have the kids over my house, and we cook out and play washers or whatever it is, and jump in the pool or whatever it is. And Will's always the guy, the last one to leave. Always is in the kitchen asking my wife if she needs any help or taking the trash out or. You know, that's just the kind of guy he is.
Very cool.
You know, he's just, you know, I have a younger son that's high school age, freshman age kid, and he's upstairs playing video games with him or watching wrestling or whatever it is. And, you know, he wasn't, I mean, did he have to do that? No, he didn't. He, you know, be the first one to leave. He, you know, hung around for who needed to and ate and left, whatever. But, he was always first one there, hugging my wife, and last one carrying the trash out, hugging my wife. He does like to eat, so he always left something extra.
He's just leaving leftovers.
But he always liked, and when you get a chance to see him, my wife made sopapilla cheesecake, and he always would leave with. He knows what to do because he always buttered her up, and she'd have one stashed in the refrigerator for him to take home.
Well, Coach,
knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing.
Coach, let me tell you, if he likes cheesecake, he's come to the right place. We got plenty of good cheesecake up here in New York.
We sure do.
Coach, you developed a heck of a player and a heck of a kid. Thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it, and good luck down the road, okay?
Thank you, Spencer.
And good luck to you guys. Thanks so much.
Enjoy your summer.
Thank you. That's Spencer Leftwich, former UTEP offensive line coach, Coach Will Hernandez. And none of that was surprising to me based on what I've heard about the kid. And look, I think the Giants are getting what they're getting here, and that couldn't be a better thing.
Can we say he checks all the boxes? I mean, not just as a player, but as a human being.
I think probably.
I mean,
look,
when you hear that,
obviously his former coach is going to come on and say anything bad about the kid. We get that, but even in all the scouting reports and everything, there isn't much not to like. Look, he's not perfect. He might struggle with some fast and speed guys and stuff like that. Nobody's a perfect prospect, but I think you have to be pretty excited about what you're getting if you're the New York Giants.
I think the one thing that Spencer said, and it was something that you mentioned, Dave Gettleman had mentioned to us originally, and then he reiterated, it didn't matter. The losing never affected him. It never infected him, actually, right, which is probably a better word.
Correct.
Because that does happen. You know
it.
We've all seen it. And you could tell the affection that he has for this player. Just the whole package of what he did. And it's very easy for even the best of players to start going downhill when things go into a slide. And so, you know, great for Will Hernandez that he never lost the luster and he remained a blue chip prospect right up until the draft.
I'm curious to see how he does in his own scheme, which is a lot of what Shermer runs when you're in mostly a gap and power scheme there. I think that'll probably be his biggest adjustment. But look,
the weight thing was interesting, though, too.
Yeah, he dropped about 10. He was 327 at the combine. He said he played around 330, right? 335?
He said 330, 340.
Yeah, so he probably lost
about
15, 20 pounds.
That's interesting to me. That's interesting to me because that was one of the knocks in terms of when people said, well, he's not going to be a high first rounder. The thing was, well, with some speed rushers, some of that lateral movement, he was a little bit, dancing bear, wasn't as quick on his feet maybe as some people would like to have him been. But if he's lost 10, 15 pounds, maybe that suddenly is not an issue anymore.
Let's do the calls at 201-939-4513. Bob in Parsippany has been holding the longest. What's up, Bob?
All right.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Hello.
Since we're talking about Will Hernandez, I'll just say that I am very thrilled that they picked him, but that's not what I came on to talk about.
Sure. Okay. What do you got?
I want to talk about the number one pick for the Giants.
Sure.
And Barkley, he's certainly worth taking at number two, but I believe that the Giants will regret not picking a quarterback because a franchise quarterback is worth more than even a Hall of Fame running back.
Bob, I agree 100%.
And John, you were on the day you had Dan Orlovsky, evaluating the quarterbacks. And Orlovsky, he just raved about Rosen. And then on draft night, we had Troy Aikman. When Rosen got picked, he says, this guy is the best talent, the best passing talent since Andrew Luck. The only thing that kept him from being the number one pick in the draft was the concussions. I think Rosen should have been a pick, and I think we should have taken the risk about the concussions for that kind of talent.
Well, Bob, here's the thing, and here's the beauty of it. You know, you love Rosen, I love Sam Darnold, and both of us are on the record about that. But this is the beauty of this. We're going to know when Eli Manning hangs it up, whenever that happens to be in 2, 3, or 4 years, however much longer he plays, we're going to see how good the Giants are with Eli as quarterback and Barkley as the running back. And then we're going to see when Eli retires whether or not there's a succession plan. And based on those two sets of results, we're going to know if they did the right thing and we're going to know if they did the wrong thing. And we'll obviously see the circumstances along the way if they're mitigating or anything like that. And the Giants have chosen a path. They're going to try their best to win with Eli Manning. And I know he has only 2 years left on his deal, but the way Dave Gettleman has spoken about it and Pat Shermer, I mean, if he plays really well this year, Paul, would you be shocked if he got like a 1-year contract extension or something like that? I wouldn't be.
No,
so,
there are even economic reasons why you could
get an
extension.
I think I would be. And I would be because next year – he's got if Manning retired or they got rid of him, they would save $17 million in cap money, which could be used for Landon Collins or Beckham.
Yeah, but Bob, here's the thing. If Eli plays well this year and they win a lot of games,
there's no way he's going to retire.
That cap space is well spent. It's not wasted cap space, you know what I mean? If he plays poorly, you know, it's a completely different conversation. But if he's good, yeah, you pay a quarterback $20 million. That's the going rate, you know what I mean?
Yes, I understand. Yeah, I think we might be getting back to respectability, you know, like maybe 500 or close to 500. I don't see playoff in our horizon this year.
We'll see. Thank you, Bob. appreciate the call. And again, it's guys, this is a results-oriented business. Paul and I have said since the beginning, we know Eli's the quarterback this year, and after this year, it's on a year-to-year basis. And we'll see how it goes. If he plays really well this year, you know what? He's going to be back. If he plays really poorly, there's a chance he's not going to be. That's the way the league works for every player and every team. It's not just Eli Manning. It's everybody.
And remember, Elway, Brady, and Peyton Manning all won Super Bowls after they turned 37. So let's not disqualify this guy just because he's 37 years old. That's known as age discrimination.
Oh, please.
It is. I've had people argue with me on Twitter. He's 37. Oh, he's shot. Oh, just because he's 37? Come to the dance with more evidence, and then we'll discuss it. Don't just give me he's 37. That's not good enough.
Well, yeah, but people tend to – historically, people tend to decline as they get older. Okay. I mean, that's the facts of life.
Yeah, but not in recent years because the –
depending on the player.
Right.
Drew Brees isn't as good now as he was 2 or 3 years ago.
No, but he's still pretty dangerous.
Sure he is. Again, it all depends on how well he plays. That's the point.
No doubt. Now, 15, 20 years ago, if you had said it's unlikely that a 37-year-old or plus quarterback – could resuscitate a team's chances, I would have said to you, okay, probably more realistically.
It is a little different now.
But
I agree
now,
with that.
That's you know, this is the year 2018 when physicality, man, you know, where 50 is the new 40 and 30 is the new 20 and 60 is the new 40 and everything else, everybody's turning back the clock. So I don't want to hear about he's 37, he's shot. That's age discrimination, and I'm not going to tolerate it. Let's go. Hey, I'm over 37. That's why, okay?
Oh, but every general manager.
George Foreman proved. George Foreman proved that there is life after 40.
But he wasn't as good after 40 as he was at
30.
He won
a heavyweight championship of the world. Ask Michael Moorer.
Oh, my God. All right, let's go to Justin in Philly. I'm not going to win this. Justin, go ahead, pal. How are you?
Guys, how are you?
Good, Justin. How are you?
Good. I agree with your last caller. I mean, I called last week saying I wanted Sam Darnold. That conversation's kind of passed.
Yep.
So I kind of moved into the camp of, all right, we got, you know, the best weapon, you know, arguably the best player in the draft. So let's push the chips into the front of the pot here. And I agree with the second round pick, but I'm a little bit perplexed with not addressing the cornerback and secondary position and getting, you know, Kyle LaLeta does not make much sense to me. It seems like they're kind of hedging their bet a little bit and may not, you know, trust Davis Webb as much and says, you know, let's put more competition into that.
Yeah, but Justin, hold on a second. Yeah. If you're in favor of picking a quarterback in the first round, why would Kyle LaLeta not make sense to you? Obviously, it's not the same amount of resources put into the problem that you're worried about Eli Manning's, you know, future replacement. But you are putting another guy into the mix, which you're right is hedging your bet, and you're giving yourself a better chance of having this successor. I don't know why you would dislike LaLeta in four, but at the same time want a quarterback in round one. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, because I think once you didn't pick a quarterback in round one, you kind of drew the line in the sand and said, you know what, we're going to go all in. And I think that you could have addressed the offensive line later in the draft and use your resources for this regime right now to help Eli right now in these next 2 years.
So yeah, but see, Justin, here's the thing, though. And honestly, this is what I believe, and I didn't know this was the fact before the draft. And I learned once the draft was over, this is how David Gettleman was operating, and I figured it out based on how he made his selections. Do not take anything more out of any of the Giants' selections other than he picked the player that he thought was best. There's no other explanation as to why you would select two defensive tackles when you run a 3-4 and you already have Dalvin Tomlinson and Snacks Harrison. He picked the guys
exactly
that he thought were simply the best players, and it makes sense. Kyle LaLeta had a third-round grade. That's what they said in the post-draft press conference. He was the best player on their board in that round. That's why they took him. That's why they took Barkley. They didn't pass on Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen because of Davis Webb. They passed on those guys because they thought Barkley was simply a much better prospect. That's why they did it. So I think fans have to be careful, and it's not just you. I've heard other people do this too, where they're trying to make sweeping generalizations about Dave Gettleman's mindset based on who he picked and where. No, he only did these things for one reason. He liked that player better than the other players that were there, regardless of where they played. And I didn't know that's how he was going to operate before the draft, but after watching it, I'm pretty damn sure that's how he operates.
Yeah, it was clear he went top value on the board in each round. And, oh, by the way, the last several years, the Patriots have picked quarterbacks in the middle rounds, and then they've traded those guys because they were able to use them as trade bait. Guys like Garoppolo,
Mallett,
guys like Brissette, and Mallett.
Garoppolo, right.
They were all trade bait. For all you know, Loletta could be trade bait in 2 years.
So quick question. I'll
yes.
take it off the air.
Sure.
But, you know, this year, let's say the draft, you know, obviously Eli Manning's a starting quarterback. Davis Webb's on the team. Kyle Loletta's on the team. Eli Manning, and you're all in on this year and Eli Manning and this team right now. And the team is, you know, doing well the first 10 games and Eli Manning gets hurt. You're going to go with either Davis Webb or Kyle Loletta as your backup quarterback?
Yeah, Justin, you know what? Here's Webb's the bottom line.
Webb is the guy who's going to step in because he's the one who's being prepped for it.
If you draft a quarterback in the third round, if he's not ready to be your backup quarterback in his second year in the league, you made a mistake. You can't draft a quarterback on day two and he can't not be ready to be your quarterback in his second year. If you did that, then you made a mistake.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks,
thank you,
guys.
Justin. And look, he has to be ready. Because I don't, you know, I heard Carl and Maggie and Bart talking about this on their show yesterday briefly, and they're like, oh, they're gonna try to squeeze one of these guys in the practice squad. They have to bring in a veteran. These are the three quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Neither guy is getting through to the practice squad. Okay, it's not happening. Who would get swooped up in a split second?
Because Shurmur had mentioned there was a possibility. He wants three quarterbacks on the team, and one could end up on the practice squad. He mentioned that as a possibility. Because he threw that line in there, I think some people jumped on it.
Yeah, it ain't but happening, though.
It's my opinion. He will keep all three on the 53, and Loletta's going to be the guy who's inactive holding the clipboard on Sundays.
Yeah,
and
I would agree with that.
He'll be the red shirt.
Yeah.
He'll be the red shirt like Davis Webb was this past season.
Correct.
Loletta will be the red shirt. And then whenever Eli passes the torch to Davis Webb, if Loletta's still here, he will be the number two. That's the way it's going to be,
in my
estimation.
Well, they're going to – Eli might not pass the torch for two more years. And this coaching staff will have 2 years to evaluate Webb and Loletta and make a decision. Mm-hmm. I don't think their order is set in stone.
I'm giving you my gut feeling as
correct.
To how it's going to play out.
Exactly. But, of course, they love competition, and people want to see
sure.
competition. Coach Marvin in Delaware wants to continue on the quarterbacks on line four. What's up, Coach Marvin?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good to hear from you. What's up?
Hi.
Good job on that last call, John. I got a couple of things here.
Yes.
First thing is Gettleman and with all the fans, and I understand their passion for the game. I mean, I deal with parents, and they probably can be worse. you know what I mean? Dealing with parents in high school or youth football, it's very difficult. Everybody got a superstar son or daughter. But what I always tell those parents in the beginning of my season in August, I said, starting this season, I actually lose. No matter what I do this season, I lose. Because I can't satisfy everybody.
Right.
You know, we're going to call plays, and they're going to be aunts and uncles and cousins and brothers. And everybody's going to criticize certain plays. Everybody's going to criticize who's not playing. So you can't satisfy everybody, but do what you think is best for the team, and that's what Mr. Gettleman's doing.
Yes.
As far as the quarterback, Loletta, I was like you guys on draft day. I saw your face when his name came up. Because everybody was looking for Crosby, and I was looking for Crosby. And to hear Loletta's name, for a second, it threw me off. And I was kind of like wondering about it.
I imagine Paul's face was better than mine.
So I kind of like did a little bit of studying on him, because I didn't know nothing about him other than the Senior Bowl. And a lot of professional people like him. Some people are saying that they thought he was a second-round pick.
Yeah, absolutely.
That the Patriots could take him in the second round. So he must have some quality. They're talking about his accuracy, maybe not a strong arm. And so I looked it up, looked at him, and he did look pretty good. So you never know what you have, because I saw Mr. Cassidy. He was the GM in Texas.
Charlie.
Name. Charlie, yes. Mm-hmm. Charlie loves the guy. And Sean McShay likes the guy. So these are quality people that watches this stuff. And they like him. They think he could have been a second or third round pick. So I think it might turn out to be okay. He may he could be the guy, or Webb could be the guy, but not worried about all that. Eli may have 3 years, so let's see what he has.
Sure.
And my last part is I thought Gettleman did a good job. If you look at those top picks when we first started, you had Barkley, Chubb, Nelson, and the quarterbacks. He actually went and did that. He took guys that could be similar to these guys. He took Carter, who can be similar to Chubb. He's not Chubb, but
same
he can
position.
Be similar to him. Mm-hmm. He took Hernandez, who was, I think, the second-rated guard behind Nelson.
Depending on who you talk to.
And he took a quarterback that a lot of people like. So I think he did a good job. So I think people just need to give it a chance, and there's no right and there's no wrong. You just got to let the season go and see what happens. And too late to compare him to anybody. Say, oh, let's see what Donald do. He gave up a franchise player. He's gone. What are you going to do? That's it. He's not playing for the Giants. Just go with the people they got.
Thank you, Coach Marvin. Appreciate the call,
You're
buddy.
You're welcome.
And look, I think it's important to note that at some point we're going to have to move past the quarterback Barkley discussion. And look, this whole week, next week, we can talk about it now. But once we get into training camp and stuff, I don't want to be relitigating who the Giants should have drafted a million times, all right? We're not going to know for 3 or 4 years what the right decision was. We'll figure it out as we go. But they've made the decision. We know what direction they're going in. We know what the mindset is. And we'll move forward. Obviously, next couple weeks, we can still react to it, have fun with it. But the die has been cast. You can't hit rewind on the VCR like Paulie Dotts watching his game tape and, you know, change your mind. So,
well,
we are where we are right now.
It's kind of like the parents who have a bunch of little kids in the back of the station wagon. And they're crying about, oh, we wanted to go to the, you know, ice cream store before dinner. Well, too late. Guess what? We're going to have dinner first. You get your ice cream later. That's it. Be quiet. It's over. Relax for the rest of the car ride. Folks, relax for the next 5 years. You didn't get your quarterback. Tough luck. Done.
Relax. But they can call it a react for the next couple of weeks. That's my point. We're still reacting to the draft. That's okay. I'm trying to soft sell this,
fun.
And you're coming in with a hammer.
I'm having fun with them. I'm having fun with them. Hey, here's the thing, okay?
In all
honesty, because of what the Giants did, they've told you for months how they were going to plot out the near future for this team. They've told you that for months. Then they drafted these guys, and that tells you.
It reinforces it.
Reinforces everything about what they were trying to do.
Cool.
They're trying to do something in this next 2-year window, maybe 3-year window.
Maybe 4.
And at the same time, they went and got an insurance policy for their backup quarterback. There's really nothing else to say. Yeah. That's it. This is the plan that's been set in stone. You just got to live with it and move forward. That's it.
Here's what I've learned, okay? And I'm going to write something on Giants.com tomorrow about this. Dave Gettleman says what he thinks and thinks what he says. When he gives you what he believes in and how he's going to operate, that's what he believes in and how he's going to operate. He didn't give away the store as to who the Giants were going to draft. But you know what? If you listen to what he said, that they were always going to pick the guy that gave you the most value, and he was going to emphasize running the ball, stopping the run, and getting to the quarterback.
And a Hall of Fame caliber player.
You knew who the Giants were going to pick.
It wasn't hard
to figure it out.
It wasn't hard.
Now, the trick is most GMs lie to you, and they'll BS you, and they'll tell you one thing and do something else. Based on this year, Dave Gettleman, straight shooter. Let's go to...
He should be a paisan. Dave Gettleman should be Italian because he comes right at you. He lets you know right to your face exactly what he's thinking.
Straight shooter. Let's go to Mitchell
there
in
you
Nashville.
Go.
He's up next. Hey, Mitchell, you're on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's up?
Yeah, I've just been saying I've been keeping up with you guys basically since the beginning of the year. You guys have been doing a great job leading up to the draft.
Thank you.
It's been really entertaining.
Appreciate it.
With the calls and everybody's going on. As far as the draft, like everybody's been saying, I feel like the players we got. You know, let's ride the boat. Let's try to go for this championship. And I feel like, especially with Saquon, it gives Eli an extra 2-year window to me just because of the type of player he is. Basically, it's finished Eli Manning's career. And I feel like the upcoming season, I feel like we do got some holes as far as with the X receiver, as far as who's going to be our strong blocking receiver. I feel like we should set that edge. And listen, like, I know Eric Decker's still out there.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Dirk's out there. I know there's a whole thing with Dez Bryant. It's a big, you know, up in the air. If he fits in with the team, stuff like that. So I feel like Eric Dirk's still out there. And I feel like we also could use a free safety or a slot corner type of hybrid mix? Because I know we have some guys coming in, and I wanted to ask Paul, like, as far as with the undrafted free agents, if there's like any big play receivers that we got or slot corners that's really interesting.
No, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, the receiving core that was undrafted, the top of the receiving core, I had gotten a list of them. None of them were necessarily standouts for me. I would almost rather bet my money on either Roger Lewis or Travis Rudolph having to pick up their game and winning those jobs. I do think they've got to bring in competition. Supposedly, there will be a couple of receivers coming in. But right now, if you asked me, odds on favorite, who's the 4 and 5, it's probably Lewis and Rudolph. That doesn't mean that they can't get beaten out. Again, you just don't know sometimes. Someone will have a really good summer and kind of edge somebody else to the sideline. We'll have to see. In terms of the corners, you know, the kid from Penn State, Haley, is reported to have had interest with the Giants. Now, we're not going to give you any names particularly because until these undrafted rookie free agents actually sign contracts and step on the field at rookie minicamp, they're not the property of the team. And that's why I want to caution you. All the names you're seeing on the internet, I don't care if they say they've agreed to, they've signed, or whatever. Until the guy gets here, I've been around this game too long to know that guys were supposedly going to be going to a team as an undrafted rookie free agent. And before minicamp, they wind up changing their mind and going somewhere else. Kind of like being left at the altar, if you will, at the middle of, the middle of the church ceremony. It happens all the time. So don't live by anything you've seen on the internet and guys supposedly coming here. Until they get here and sign, they're not here. So I would say to you, though, there are a couple of corners supposedly of heavy interest to the Giants that may be here that could provide some help. But don't count out Dante Dion as the backup slot corner. Don't do that.
He's Paul's guy. You got to understand.
He's one of my guys, the dark horse from last year. I think
two years ago, right?
Yeah, actually it was. I think he could back up William Gay at the corner at the slot corner spot.
Okay, and I had a last follow-up question, so I'll take that offline.
Sure.
I know Hankins is a free agent. I just want to ask what's going on with him. And, you know, last time I checked, he's a pretty talented player, and he's just sitting out there right now with no job. And I feel like with the right tackle situation, what do you think is going to happen with that? And I know we did have a rookie from last year who's coming in, and he has some high expectations. But I feel like we're in a league right now. If you don't have a left tackle and a right tackle really block and set the edge, it's going to be a really tough night, you know, no matter how talented your team is.
All right, thanks, Mitchell. Appreciate the call, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Look, Hankins is talented. I'm surprised he isn't picked up somewhere, but I think those guys that got let go late, like him and a Dez Bryant, teams are going to wait till after the draft, and their undrafted free agent crop comes in before they make a move on those guys. So I would think by the end of May, those guys would probably be on a roster somewhere, at least by the second or third week in May when OTAs start.
I wouldn't be shocked if some of those veterans find a job within a week, to be perfectly frank with you.
Well, that's
not unlikely.
I was thinking maybe the team would like to get a look at the guys at rookie minicamp before they sign the
veterans. Some will.
So I was thinking after rookie minicamp.
Some will, and some guys are going to say, you know what, we got holes that we got to deal with now. Let's get these guys in here sooner rather than later.
I could see that too. And look, Hankins is talented. I think the Giants' cupboard at defensive tackle is fairly full right now. But then again, like, and here's another nugget that we're going to have to take into consideration. Because again, whatever Dave Gettleman says now, I'm gonna believe. He made the point that when they get to roster construction at the end of training camp, he doesn't have like, well, I want 8 defensive linemen, I want 8 offensive linemen, I want 9 corners or 9 defensive backs. That's not how he does this. He's going to pick the best players, even if it means an unbalanced roster. So that's something we're going to have to take into consideration when we have our roster breakdowns and such in training camp. 201-939-4513.
247sports.com is quoting Gil Brandt as saying, I thought the Giants had far and away the best draft. Their first two picks, Barkley and Hernandez, were among the top 15 ranked players in the 150 list I released before the draft, and they should both be instant starters.
They should be.
The godfather of football, Gil Brandt, very high with the Giants picks. Just wanted to throw that in while I just saw
and
it.
And ideally, too, you pick second, you should have a good draft.
Darn well. Darn straight. I agree with that.
Let's go to Jeff in Rhode Island. He's up next. Hey, Jeff, what's going on, pal? And it's Dave Gittleman,
hey,
so no one's going to line up at your presser
today?
And say, we drafted crap. What's up, Jeff? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine, thank you. You guys did a great job on the pre-draft and the draft as well.
Thank you.
I wouldn't have expected any less than that. I was when we got to the fourth round Saturday, I was surprised by Laletta being drafted. I had thought at that point in time we might go for some more offensive line help, and I know you guys discussed the two tackles that were left on the board there that were pretty highly rated, and I guess they weren't drafted because of injury concerns, or I don't know if they were drafted later on. But
fifth round for
ever,
both.
Ever hear anything else about maybe why they weren't drafted?
Yeah, Crosby seemed to be an injury red flag. We never really got a good answer on Jones, right, Paul?
Nothing. Other than Lions took Crosby and Seahawks took Jones, and both went in the fifth round, which by many accounts was it maybe two rounds later than where they should have gone talent-wise. So obviously the league had some yellow flags on these guys for them to fall that far.
Yeah. Okay. Well, overall, I'm saying that I'm pretty happy with the draft, and although at this point in time it looks like we're a little late in the secondary and maybe at right tackle, but we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out. And I'm looking forward to the rookie mini camp, which will be about 10 days or so.
May 11th.
Yeah, that's May 11th, it starts next Friday is when it kind of really kicks off.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys. You have a great day, okay?
Hey, you too, Jeff.
Take care.
Thank you very much for checking in. Let's go to Roy in New Jersey. He's up next. Hey, Roy, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Hi.
John, when I look at the logo on your shirt, it doesn't exactly evoke memories of the glory days of the
Giants. You
know,
Roy, it's funny. But Paul Dottino, and I didn't realize this logo I didn't realize this logo
I
was only used
him.
For 1 year and how bad that year was. But literally,
was
we walked in, and Paul was like, you know what season that's from, don't you? So I'm sorry, everybody. My bad.
Yeah. Paul, that might have been, I don't know if it was 74, 75.
75.
Like Arnsberger's last year or whatever. It was.
75, the Shea Stadium season. Craig Morton was the quarterback. Walker Gillette, the leading receiver. Joe Dawkins, the leading running back. It was a mess. An absolute mess. A logo that I care not to think about.
So I have to make sure I wear it around Paul all the time.
Yeah.
Words.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
The first game my dad ever took me to was at Shea. They played the Cardinals.
There you go.
And, predictably, they lost, but that when I see that logo, it just kind of brings back not so fond memories.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a contrarian here. I absolutely love the draft. I didn't want them to go anywhere near a quarterback. And the reason is, if you told me last year before the season that Eli was going to be pressured more than all the quarterbacks except for three, was going to have the offensive line play that he had, that the running game was going to be worst or second worst in the league, and that he was going to play the majority of the year with without two of his top three receivers and part of a season without his third best receiver, and he would have thrown for 19 touchdowns and 62%, I would have said, that sounds to me like he's doing a pretty good job. I don't get all the hate for Eli. Nobody's talking about Drew Brees hanging it up. Nobody's talking about Phillip Rivers getting old.
You know
and
why?
No, you know what? No. In fairness, people have mentioned Ben Roethlisberger retiring. People
well,
have
ben
talked about
a little different.
And people have talked
ben
about
is,
the
Ben has been beat up a lot in his career.
And people have talked about the Chargers preparing for a life after Rivers. Remember,
right.
Everyone thought the Saints were trading up for Lamar Jackson. So, in fairness, people are talking about those teams trying to find the next guy too. They are.
Yes, I don't disagree with that. But here's the thing: the reason that you get people picking on Eli is twofold. Fantasy football, okay, because Eli Manning is not a fantasy football quarterback. He is a real NFL quarterback who does things on the field that fantasy football people can't understand, okay, because it doesn't help them with their numbers. and it doesn't help them win their points and win their money and whatever else. So he's not a fantasy football quarterback. That's one. Number two, I know you love this, don't you? Number two, and very, very important, is that because people are so into analytics and fantasy football, they don't care that he doesn't have a great offensive line in front of him. They don't care that he has a sporadic running game to deal with. They don't care that he's dealing with third-level wide receivers. No, that doesn't matter.
Well, that was only for 1 year, the third-level wide receiver.
Well, this past season.
Only 1 year.
Two seasons ago, Eli Manning was tied with Stafford in Detroit with six fourth-quarter come-from-behind victories, okay? That's what that, and he went to the Pro Bowl. Okay, that's why people are infected by analytics and fantasy football, and that's why Eli will never get his just due.
I agree. Listen, in 1997, Paul remembers this, the Giants won the division. They were 10-5-1. The combination of quarterbacks was Danny
Cannell
and Dave Brown,
yeah,
who threw for a combined 3,000 yards.
Yep.
And the running backs were Tyrone Wheatley,
Charles Way,
and Tiki as a rookie.
Yeah, well, he didn't run the ball much.
Right, but they combined for 1,800 yards rushing and 12 touchdowns. They won the division, and even though that was one of the most painful playoff games you ever have to be at, the game against Minnesota,
yes,
it was a successful season. And that's because they had a decent offensive line, and they ran the heck out of the ball, and they were in every game.
Mm-hmm. They caused a ton of turnovers.
They've not had, you know, since the three-headed monster of Ward and Jacobs
and Bradshaw.
Eli hasn't gotten a lot of help in the backfield. I think that's going to change 180 degrees this year, and my feeling is that Barkley is going to do two things. Not only is he going to be a threat out of the backfield when he's handed the ball, but they also have to account for him when he's running a wheel route or he's in the flat because he's a dynamic receiver. It's going to change how defenses plan against the Giants' offense. There's no way that Engram, OBJ, Shepard, whoever they have on the other side, and Barkley can be accounted for all the time.
Yeah.
I think this was the smartest pick Gettleman could have made for the short term and for the long term. I think Eli's going to play another 3 years, and I think he's going to have a renaissance because he finally has everything he needs. It's going to be different, and everyone's going to love Eli again.
Thank you, Roy.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. I'm going to ask you one question, Paul, before I go to the last call.
Do it.
Okay? Here's my one question for you. Assuming health remains.
Yes.
And we're sitting here in December.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we should hear any more but this when it comes to Eli's overall performance this year. He has the weapons. He has a pretty good O-line. It's not the best, but it's certainly good enough.
Better.
Certainly good enough. Do you agree with that, that Eli has the part? Let me put it this way. I'll phrase the question this way. Does Eli Manning, assuming they're healthy, have the pieces around him for him to have a very good season?
Absolutely.
Charlie in Portland, Maine. He's up next. What's up, Charlie? You're our final caller.
Hey, guys. Hey, I agree with that, the last thing you just said. Well, let me throw out some names. Now, Gettleman did pretty well with undrafted free agents, and there's a bunch of them out there.
Charlie, before you go, I'm just telling you, me and Paul cannot talk about it.
I'm not going to say that they're on the team.
Yep.
I'm just throwing out some names.
Yep.
All right? Okay. There's two guys. One is Tyler Howell, left tackle from Missouri, 6'8". 330 pounds. The kid is a good tackle, played in what's Missouri, the Big 12 or the Little 6, or I don't know where they are, but they played some good school. Now, that's a guy that could come in, huge man, play on the right side. There's another guy that is interesting out there. He's from Nebraska, Nick Gates, another big guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then there's free agents. Now, it's Mr. Austin Howard, played with the Ravens. So, and we also, have some guys on the team that are going to be competing. Now, Basmani Rice, which is what I call Buzz, he's a big dude. He would be great on the right side along with Hernandez if he can figure out how to stop speed rushers. So maybe Hunt can really work with him and make something happen. But there is options out there. So I'm not super concerned about the right side. I think we're going to get a guy. And Gettleman, remember, got Norwell, undrafted free agent. He had turned out pretty well. So all he has to do is get one gem out there, and then we can solidify the right side of our line. So that's what I'm looking at. Check that guy out from Missouri. He's very, very interesting project.
We'll check him out.
And I don't think he's going to be too much of a project because he played the left side. He has technique. I'm telling you, he looks better than Flowers right now than Flowers was.
Thank you, Charlie.
Okay, guys. Have a good day.
Okay. I got to be honest. I'm not that familiar with him. Neither one of the guys made Brugler's book, so I don't know who they are.
There is a story out of the Columbia Missourian where they're talking about the possibility of players from that school who would have been potentially picks.
Yeah.
And they said he participated in Pro Day, which is very nice. So obviously I guess he did things there. And it says he possesses the size and speed to perform in the NFL, but did not see enough of the field during his time in Missouri. It does not indicate if that was injury-related or otherwise.
All right, Charlie, I did promise I'll get to a couple tweets. A rapid-fire tweet questions, Paul, real quick.
Go to it.
Where do you see Hernandez fitting in on the line? I know they said they try him on both sides, but it seems like they have two left guards in Omame and Hernandez, and Xander Cage cannot see either of them not starting.
Well, we know that Omame started out in the NFL as a right guard
in San Francisco
and then played some left guard, so I would think he's more likely to go that way and Hernandez stays at left.
And they said they're going to try both guys at both spots
they did
in the
say
spring,
that.
And we'll see how they go. Matt DeSantis, sorry, we cannot comment on the undrafted free agents because nothing is official yet. At Larry Soprano, I had to ask this one for Paulie Dotz. Was Stewart signed, that's Jonathan Stewart, to mentor Barkley, or will he get the lion's share of the goal line touches?
I think that'll have to play out during the course of camp and then the early part of the season, but I don't think there's any doubt that Stewart was also brought in here in addition to being a roster guy, being a character guy, because the Giants, they needed a big brother in that running back's room. So I don't think you can discount his ability to be a character guy.
I think he's going to be both.
Yeah, it could be.
I remember, I watched Barkley in short yardage a lot. He likes to go over the top. He doesn't really pound it and move the pile.
We'll see how that turns out.
And
but,
then,
you know, character is important with him.
Finally, more likely to be signed prior to camp by the Giants, a veteran, right tackle, DRC, or Dez?
You know what's really funny? Folks, I'm going to, on a Bible, I know nothing about this. In my heart of hearts, I would give DRC a phone call. And they wanted him to stay. That we know. He declined to take the pay cut, and so it was his choosing to have the Giants release him. But they wanted him to stay. Who's to say now, maybe if he hasn't found anything out there to his liking, that maybe that could not be a fit again.
And I'm sure DRC, the vet that he is, doesn't mind not having to go to spring workouts either.
I'm sure he doesn't.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure he doesn't, but
right. Well,
is that possible?
Well, my point being that he's going to be patient. He's not in a rush.
He's going to be patient,
right.
But I tell you, you could do a lot worse than bringing him back.
Good stuff, Paulie.
Yep.
Tomorrow we'll have Russ Huseman, the head coach of the Richmond Spiders, to talk about Kyle Lollett at the top of the show. Paul and I will be back with you talking draft and taking more of your calls. Thanks for being with us. Thank you to Spencer Leftwich, the former offensive line coach of Will Hernandez at UTEP. And thank you to the callers. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a great day, everybody.